All right, hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 151. In this episode, we are waiting for Mr. Jesse Plemons to show up and talk about his role in the new Netflix film El Camino, a Breaking Bad story. Before we do that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Three Drinks In. You'll easily find us. Click subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. I forgot to mention that I'm your host, Vince, and over there is Phil.
Hey.
There he is. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Three Drinks In Pod. That's at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. You can like us on Facebook, and you can email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. All right, you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Episode 151 with Jesse Plemons. I have to ice my knee for like 2 hours a night.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
It's not like it's that intense. It's, you know, 20 minutes on, 20 minutes off. So it's, you know, it's grand total of maybe an hour of it actually. But it's just sort of cumbersome. So I had to get on the bike and ride the bike. And it's like, oh, I can't not put ice on it after I do that. So
How long are you supposed to do this for?
2 months, 3 months.
So,
yeah, no, it's for those of you who are listening still and who care, I had arthroscopic knee surgery a couple of weeks ago. So, it's, you know, it's extremely minor. It's outpatient surgery. They do put you under the general anesthesia, though, which I didn't know going in. So, like, this is my first time doing that, where they, it's better than it is on like the old ER TV shows where they, you know, they would put that thing down your windpipe to help you breathe. They just put a thing in your mouth to help you breathe. It doesn't go all the way into your throat, which is great because if they do that, then you can't talk for like a day because it scratches your vocal cords. And this didn't do that, but you're out there pretty good, I'll tell you. Yeah. And like, you know enough that you don't make any sense that you're like, what the f-? And you're all embarrassed at some point, like, what did I say in there? I'm like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, just ignore that.
Everyone sounds like a lunatic, I'm sure. Or at least, like, you sound like nothing at all, but your perception of yourself is so skewed because you're so heavily medicated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that propofol is powerful stuff.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, enough about my knee. Breaking Bad movie finally came out.
Yeah. Finally, so came out.
We're waiting for Jesse Plemons, also of Fargo and Black Mirror fame, to show up.
I think he was in, wasn't he in Friday Night Lights? Was that his big thing?
Maybe.
I think that's what it was.
I never watched that show. It was supposed to be good.
Yeah, I never watched it.
It seemed too much like Varsity Blues to me. Which was a fine movie when I was 17, you know, but it's not something I could then see making a TV show out of, but I, what the hell do I know? So,
well, it was, it's based off a book.
Oh yeah.
And then they made a movie out of it and then they made a TV show out of it. So it's Varsity Blues, but real.
Oh, right. There was a movie. And then I guess that's where my confusion was like, this is sort of, I don't know if they do that a lot anymore, or if they ever did, but like to make a movie out of it, make a TV show out of a movie. I mean, MASH did it, you know.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
worked
they
out pretty well.
They do it. It's just most of them are terrible.
Right. You know, MASH was the exception.
Yeah.
And I guess this was too, apparently. But
everybody raved about it. I didn't really watch it.
He always seemed like a discount Matt Damon to me, like a kind of pudgier Matt Damon with the same kind of haircut, and I don't know, just that's like the look this guy always had to me.
Mm-hmm.
Was that?
He's definitely pudgy in this.
Yeah, he's put on some weight.
I mean, it's been a few When did Breaking Bad end? 2016?
No. Ended well before that.
Let's look.
Let's
2013.
Really?
Yeah, that's what it says. Okay. Mr. Google never lies. No. Except when he does.
That's true.
Yeah, so it's been 6 years. I mean, that's not a short amount of time.
Yeah, and he's actually worked probably more than anyone besides Bryan Cranston. You know, he did a whole season of Fargo, which was very critically well received, and he did probably the best episode of Black Mirror. I don't know, because I can't watch that show. It's so creepy. But that episode was really, really great. And he was so good in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what else he's done in the Friday Night Lights. And so, like, he's done a bunch of stuff. Unlike Aaron Paul.
Yeah, Aaron Paul hasn't done that much.
Yeah. There was a Looper video I watched a few days ago that was talking about why he hasn't worked. And it's, you know, Looper's interesting. It's mostly clickbait, though, like the way that they title their YouTube videos. But they were saying, like, you know, he had offers coming out the wazoo when the show was over, but he, you know, you picked the wrong one, and then you make a bad movie, you end up in movie jail. And mm-hmm. That's kind of where he is. Like, I think he's going to be on Westworld. That's, like, the next thing he's doing.
Yeah.
So, which is the definition of a supposedly great show that 18 people watch per week.
And Westworld. Yeah.
Like, I tried watching it. I don't think I made it through the first episode. I was so bored.
You know? Yeah, that's what I kind of heard, that, like, it was boring.
Yeah.
And it didn't really go anywhere. And it was, I always think of, Sons of Anarchy is not that good of a show, but Sons of Anarchy was one of those shows where everyone was like, it's one of those dramas, it's prestige television, but it's like empty-headed, you know, like characters just stare off into space and we're supposed to think they have these deep, meaningful connections to one another. And like, it's just not written well. It's not good.
You just see like some guy, some kind of key grip has like a tennis ball. You know, just like, you just stare at this object in the middle distance and then it'll, we'll assume that you're being pensive.
Yeah, do it with a gravelly voice. Yeah. I know you're serious. So, like, Westworld is kind of like that.
And can we get Anthony Hopkins?
Anyway. Yeah, he's apparently very busy doing work.
Yeah.
Good for him.
At 102 years old, good for him. So so that's what his next thing is supposed to be. But, yeah, no, we didn't. He made, the money must have been good to make Need for Speed, right? Must have. Because I don't get how you...
To do this?
No. Like for Aaron Paul to have made Need for Speed. Like,
oh.
Like I was thinking about the story that Jason Jason Alexander told about doing Dunstan Checks In. You know, and he kind of went to the guys at the studio. He's like, listen, I know, you know, why you want me to do this. You think I'm going to bring in, you know, the parents of all these kids to see this goofy kids movie. But, like, I'm telling you, I'm not the guy. I really don't want to do this. And then they quintupled my going rate. And he's like, well, okay, fine. Like, becomes financially irresponsible for you not to do the bad movie at that point. Mm-hmm. Which you do have to weigh alongside never making another one ever again, which is always a threat, no matter how famous you are. And I'm just thinking, like, who sat him down and said, okay, a video game movie based on a game with no characters whatsoever. Like, it's just a racing game. What did... those kinds of movies are bad... The ones based on games are bad in general, and the Cosmonaut guy has a great video as to why. It was pretty insightful. So is it that it was a blank slate? We'll just use the title, and that'll draw in some fans? Like, I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, you know, sometimes the actors just want to do things they want to do, and they can't be talked out of it. I always think of Aaron Eckhart was in The Dark Knight. He was Harvey Dent. And then after that, I mean, he was also in this movie called Thank You for Smoking, which was pretty good.
Yeah, he was good in that.
But then after that, he was in all these awful B movies that like came out in January, and they were just, and it just, he's disappeared. I never see him in anything anymore. It's like, why would he pick Frankenstein? Like, where he's like the chain whip wielding bounty hunter. It's like, well, he just wanted to. He just wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's a thousand machinations about that too, that like we're not privy to because we're not in the biz. But like, you know, how things get shot and then reworked in post, and then they get, you know, reshot and edited, and then the marketing guys have a field day with it. And then maybe it was a great movie that just got cannibalized along, you know, in the process of, like, you know, it was making any movie, they always say, is like a miracle anything happens, you know, because there's so much connected to it to do that, like, between getting everyone together and making it and then producing it and then finishing it up, it's like, it's amazing anything ever comes out of that town that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, but that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about El Camino. So, this was like a big secret, and it was the first time I've ever been genuinely surprised that something was happening. Like, they filmed it in like, I think 50 days, so like a little under 2 months in secret, edited it in secret, and then the first time anyone got an inkling of it was, I think Bob Odenkirk accidentally mentioned it in an interview. Because like, they're asking him, oh, do you think they'll ever make a Breaking Bad movie? He's like, they did already, didn't they? Like, didn't they just finish filming it? Like, and the person was apparently stunned. They went, wait, what? And then Netflix drops a trailer, you know, a few weeks ago or whatever. And then, but like, you kind of thought this would be bigger news, or rather news that was more widely available. You know, like, it's hard to keep these things a secret when people consider this show, you know, now to be the best TV show ever made. You'd think that that moniker would gender some more curiosity from people about, you know, when you make a movie out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because like it's on Netflix and not like AMC. Like, AMC runs commercials for its own things. Every other commercial is something that they have, but Netflix doesn't really advertise on TV unless it gets it out through social media.
Yeah, I mean, their advertising is done differently. They have a different focus on that. But yeah, usually through Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and that's how they'll, and just putting it up on their app and their site to say this is coming.
Yeah,
but it wasn't, and it didn't really need to be, because once you say there's a Breaking Bad movie, everyone's like, oh wait, really? And then they go see it. Like, they're not, because they're not really concerned about getting people to a theater, which is where their business model really sort of makes your head scratch as to how it's going to sustain itself.
Yeah, it's just, it's already on there, so, and you've already paid for it, so whatever.
Like, they do their, you know, limited New York and L.A. release just for the academies to meet their criteria for, I guess, Oscar contentions and things like that. But, yeah, they don't really care. You know, they already had money.
It doesn't matter. So. Like, it doesn't even matter if it does well. Because, you know, it's, you've already paid for it. The guy who made it already said, like, we're not making any more. It's just one extra thing. I think the show ended so well that nobody really needed anything else. It just felt like extra. You know, I think about all these other shows that don't end well after such a long buildup and hype. And if they come out with a Game of Thrones movie, I think people would be more excited. Like, well, they can make up for that crappy ending. But this time it was like, well, the ending was pretty good. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, they're really, well, you do this, essentially. I mean, like, it's sort of this is kind of the gift that keeps on giving, in a way. Like, they ended it better than any other TV show had ever ended itself before. You know, especially when it comes down to, when it comes to these kinds of TV shows that are not episodic, that they rely on, you know, shorter seasons, smaller stories, or at least in terms of time. Yet they're oftentimes very rich and full of character development, and they're complex. So, like, trying to close all the loopholes is really, really challenging. And this show benefited from the fact that most of the characters who were in it, like one by one, they either died or left. So by the end of the story, you're left with, as far as your main characters go, his family, Jesse, and Saul. And there were enough sort of, not side characters, but enough sort of other players that you could use them to complete the story without worrying about filling in every bit about them kind of thing, you know?
Are you talking about the TV show or the movie?
The TV show. Like, they only had to really, because, you know, Hank is dead, Marie is, you know, she's basically, like, there's no more story left with her. There's story for Skyler, for the kids, essentially, and for Jesse, and Walt, obviously. So, like, you just tell, you wrap up their story. Everybody else, bit by bit, over the course of the, you know, the last season and a half, they were dispensing with all the other characters. There's Gus was gone, and you know all the big players in the show began to drop away, and so you didn't have to worry about, you know, sort of finishing the stories on big characters. You could hyper focus in on Walt and his family, and you know use the new characters to help tell that story, like the neo-Nazis and Todd and all them, and you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but so what'd you think of this movie?
I thought it was boring and unnecessary.
Oh.
Yeah. I was bored through most of it.
Show your work.
Not much happens. It takes place immediately after the end of the show when he's been held by neo-Nazis and he gets freed. You know, Walt comes in, shoots them all, ends up injuring himself, so he dies. Jesse makes a break, you know, makes a run for it. And then it's all about him escaping. And like the trauma he went through all that time he was locked up with them. And that's basically all it is. He has to get out of Albuquerque and get somewhere else far away with a new life so he doesn't get caught by the cops because he was part of an illegal meth lab. And that's the whole plot, is to avoid being caught by the police, which was easy. I mean, the police don't get into, you know, they don't get involved pretty much the entire movie. The only time he comes near them, he always just ducks under his seat and he's fine. So the movie has to come up with all these other obstacles for him to overcome so that he can get away. You know, he doesn't have any money. Everybody's looking for him, yes, but he doesn't have enough, things like that. It's like, all right, this is kind of whatever. The problem is that his story's over. You know, he realizes that everything he's done was bad. I got mixed up with the wrong group. I've done bad things myself. And I just need to live a quiet life and start over. I can't atone for anything. I just have to start over. Okay, that's fine. But they, you know, if I'm not watching him change or grow, all I'm watching him do is go through the motions of how is he going to get money so we can pay the guy to help get him a new social security number for 2 hours. And this is why Better Call Saul can have good episodes and also really slow, boring episodes, because I am not as involved with the process of things as Vince Gilligan and his writers are. And they talked about this in interviews and stuff where, like, the process of them doing things is very interesting. You know, how is, in Better Call Saul, they build the meth lab underground. And so you're just watching 20, 30 minutes at a time of them building a meth lab. How are they going to get the things under construction in the dead of night so no one can know they're building a secret meth lab? That's boring. After a while, it's like I'm just literally watching a construction project. I could go down the street and watch that. You know, when you were watching Breaking Bad, all of that process, you know, how's Walt going to get out of this problem? You know, like the magnets in the truck and the little thing that looks like meth, but it's actually a bomb. That's coupled with Walt's descent into villainy. It's interesting. This doesn't have that. Neither does Better Call Saul. So a lot of it was just, you know, watching him search the guy's apartment for money. And then he drives around and tries to convince the guy who owns the vacuum store to take his cash and get him out of there. And that's like a 20-minute scene that could have easily been cut. You know, it felt like just one more extra episode that you didn't need of a TV show that ended pretty well. So I just sat there like, this is a little bit more dull than I expected. And it wasn't that I missed the other characters. Like, all the cameos were fine. It was just, there wasn't any story there besides plot. And it felt long because of that. Mm-hmm. What'd you think?
I mean, I liked it in the sense that it was well made and it was executed well, and the word coda was thrown around at some point in some description of it that I had read or heard or whatever, and I think that's the most appropriate term to describe what it is. It's a coda. It's, you know, it's an essentially extra bit at the end that you don't need because the story itself has been resolved. And in Breaking Bad's case, like, this Jesse was the only loose end to it. His escape was powerful, and it's always a very memorable thing at the end of that show where you see him drive off screaming because he knows that everyone's dead. But at the same time, like, you don't know what he presents you with the biggest question mark of the whole bunch. So Skyler and Walt's kids, you sort of can reasonably see how things turn out for them. It's not great. Like, that's sort of the saddest thing about that show is, like, and I ended up recently watching the last maybe five or so episodes of Breaking Bad before I even heard about this movie. I think I began with Ozymandias, which, by the way, was directed by Rian Johnson. Did you know that?
I think I did know that.
Yeah, I had forgotten. I didn't know who he was when I first saw it, so it didn't matter to me then. But, so from that episode to the end, I ended up watching. And so there was this really, you know, the heartbreaking moment where he goes to visit his family for the last time, and he sees his son, and he can't go near him, so he has to watch from a distance kind of a thing. And but you can see how their life ends up, and it's not great, but he'll come into some money. They won't starve to death, which is nice. Maybe they can live in a nicer place. But they're, you know, their lives are ruined by the whole thing. You know, the money can't fix that. And Jesse's freedom is sort of not guaranteed. You know, he still did bad things, and you could argue that he paid for them by having to live with these crazy people in a hole. For I don't know how long he was supposed to have been there for, but it was a while. And you know, but when he breaks through that fence and is driving off into the sunset, like, there's a lot left unresolved there, and that's powerful in and of itself, but at the same time, it's like, well, how does he manage? That's a pretty, like, the process questions show up. And I was thinking about what you had just referenced, because you mentioned it before in a different podcast about how it's interesting to certain people how things get done, and the how can sometimes take over a story and sort of you sacrifice any kind of character development for just giving you the nuts and bolts of, you know, how something is accomplished. But lost my train of thought there for a second. But so, like, it does make you wonder, how does he sort of resolve his situation when he's been so abused and so tortured, and it's the only one where you're like, I don't know how that works out. How far would he get? Maybe down the block, and all the cops show up, and he gets arrested, and that's the end of that. You know, or does he, you know, go through? So it wasn't necessary, and at times could be slow, but I thought that for what it was, it wasn't bad, and it was certainly, you know, a bit of an acting class put on by Aaron Paul, who didn't overdo it, I don't think. Kind of, you know, and it, it it felt familiar without being sort of like a caricature of himself kind of a thing. Do you agree?
I mean, yeah, well, it's supposed to be right after the show ended. So.
And that's hard to do, to go back, you know, in this case, it was 6 years and say to yourself, okay, remember how you, like, and there was obvious differences. Like, they reshot, for some reason, and I'd love to figure out why, the scene where he bursts through the gate and drives out. Like, that's a different, I guess for consistency's sake, he looks different between the actual end of the show shot and the beginning of the movie shot. Like, his beard is different. I wonder if it might have been a fake beard.
I think it was a fake beard.
Yeah.
Well, my wife was asking, like, why does he have all the scars on his face, too? Like, he's obviously been beaten up and his face has all these scars on it. And I said to her, like, he's 40. And yet, we're supposed to pretend that he's, like, 21.
He's not that young, but yeah, he's a lot younger than he is. Yeah.
But he is that young. And she was like, oh, he's not supposed to be that young. I was like, in the beginning of the show, he's, like, right out of high school. He's, like, 19 or 20. And the show doesn't take place over that many years. It's really condensed. It just felt long because we had to watch it.
That's true, right. The birthday was how you marked that, right? He was 50 on the first episode. And then when he's in the Denny's at the age, 52?
Yeah, 52, 53. Like, it's not that much time.
Yeah.
And Mike even says that in the very beginning when they're standing by the river. He's like, you know, you're like a teenage retiree. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. He's supposed to be really young. He clearly isn't. He's in his 40s. He's a man.
Yeah.
You know, so like they put the fake beard on him and they reshoot the scene just for the consistency's sake.
Yes, I forgot about that. Interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
No.
I think it was a mistake to go back to that point because he's a bad person and he suffers for the bad things he does, but he doesn't get any comeuppance of any kind except for, you know, the personal cost. Like, he never gets caught by the cops and he goes off to live a life. And he has to carry the guilt around with him forever. Okay. I don't care how he gets to where he is. And that's all they really wanted to show in this. I would have been more interested in watching him years later and people start sniffing around in Alaska or wherever it is. You know, is he still that person as an adult? Is he over it, or did he internalize it, or is he like willing to give it, you know, give himself up? You know, I mean, how long are you willing to keep yourself out of jail? Like, at what cost? What if he had a family or something?
Yeah.
You know, you could have shown the future ramifications of a life like that. You know, that would have been internal conflict, at least, because that stuff that they had with the, you know, like the welders, they took the money and he had to get the money back from them. That all felt so contrived, just to have someone he needed to shoot in the face. <You know?
laughs> I liked that scene, though.
Well, it was the only scene with any tension.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely had. Well, no, I thought that the scene, you know, when they first show up, provided some tension. The bit with the guy in the vacuum cleaner shop, it was like minimal, but it got turned up to 11 in that scene.
There wasn't any like surprises in a lot of those scenes.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of surprises. He's extremely effective as a character in the movie. Like, there's, you know, like, he's successful overall, which is good, but like at the same time, he's, you know, he gets, you know, he hits roadblocks, but they're not of his own doing. Like, he goes to get them. Like, he has the foresight to go to Skinny Pete's house to drop the car off. Pete has this brilliant plan of what to do to, you know, throw the cops off his scent, which was hysterical. And then then he goes and, you know, goes to Todd's house to get the money. And he deals with the guys pretty effectively by just saying, if you're going to shoot me, it's going to wake up everyone, so you can't do that. And then one thing after the other, he sort of dispenses with all kinds of problems without too much. Like, you could see him, like, the acting, he was doing a good job of conveying how stressed he was, but at the same time, he was successful at every turn.
Right. Well, it was also odd to me that so many people were willing to help him so much until he gets to the vacuum cleaner guy. Because that's the only real obstacle stopping him from getting away. Like, he wouldn't budge on $1,800. So at that point, it's like his friends just gave him a car and a wad of cash. And these other two maniacs let him take the third of the $1 million and everything. Like, none of this is an issue except for this, only because the movie isn't over yet.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, well, now he's going to have to go get more money. Then he has to, like, sneak into his parents' house and their guns.
And he was clever about calling them and getting them out of the house and sneaking in past the guy. Like, there was a lot that he was surprisingly adept at overcoming.
Right.
But again, like, process-wise, it was interesting to see how you would, which, to me, it's like, that part was kind of, you don't have a story without it, but, like, a little unbelievable thing that you begin in a hole for so long and you come out thinking as clear-headedly about this as anybody else.
I mean, there were hints of it that he was dealing with PTSD in the very beginning, especially. Oh, sure. He was seeing things. And then there's hints that, like, he'd sort of given up on escaping when the flashbacks, like, he won't shoot Todd. He has the gun. And you kind of think that there's, like, a very loose connection at the end where he shoots that guy at the welding plant. And now he has no problem shooting him. Like, whereas before he'd been broken down enough to be like, well, I'm captured. That's it. But it's so tenuous and it's not explored that I had to think about it later. Like, I guess that's a thing. Like, because the whole time I'm just watching a guy do stuff so he can get away and not be brought to justice. It was like, it wasn't bad. It was well made. It had the usual awesome camera angles and everything. It just felt so unnecessary.
But, like, in the realm of things, like, we live in a in an entertainment culture now that's 95% unnecessary. Like, as far as that goes, like, his story has the biggest question mark in it, and at the end of the show. So, like, you're right, it could have been handled better in terms of exploring the character and not just how he. If you wanted to tell, make that episode longer, because it does feel like a long episode. I forget who I was listening to, but they were talking about something else. It might have been the Downton Abbey movie. Somebody was saying recently that, like, that show, the first season was pretty good, but it was basically a soap opera after that. And I lost interest in it. But, like, the most mundane little things would take sort of, like, weeks, to sort of flush out. And, there was a whole thing about a cricket match that, like, took up an entire episode. I'm like, what is this show? This show is so boring. And in the movie, they took, like, an entire season and truncated it down into one movie. And it was weird because, A, the pace of the show was so different than a two-hour movie, and B, they didn't bother to omit things. They just crammed it all in, which was strange. And so here, it's kind of like that, too. They could have had this, you could have made this an entire season of just him trying to get out, and it wouldn't have been as good. But so, like, I teeter between this being a long episode or a short, or a condensed season. Could you have told longer, stories about how he recovers from this rather than just, like, he goes into the bathroom and shaves his head and he's fine? Like, he's still thinking about Todd and those scenes, I was never sure if those scenes were, like, foremost on his mind or if they were just filler to give you interesting insights into what he experienced, because you really didn't see him go through much. You know, you saw that he was in the hole, tried to escape, and then they shot the girl, which is like one of the hardest scenes to watch. My God.
I mean, those scenes were only there to explain why he was doing what he was doing without being like, I'm here because my captor kept his money hidden here. You know? Because like at first you're like, why is he going to this one apartment? And then you see the flashback where, you know, his psycho tormentor brought him there once and let him know that he had cash there. And that's why we're here now. It wasn't for any particular reason except for that. Same with like the welder. Like they show the flashback of where they put him on the chain and hook and he can't get out. Mm-hmm. Just to show that this was a guy who was a bad person and knew about it and didn't do anything. So I was like, okay. But I mean, your whole basic premise is that not everything needs to be told. I don't, like, there were some people who were like, well, we never found out what happened to Jesse. And I was like, can't you just use your imaginations? It's that thing in your head that shows pictures. It can be whatever you want. Just like the Sopranos ending. Did he die? I don't know. How does it look to you in your head? Because I can guarantee whatever you're picturing is probably better than what they wanted to put. Well, now we have the answer, and it was fine.
I've been thinking about his character, though, for the last few weeks, and just watching some old episodes and then watching this. Is he a victim? Is that like how you would overall describe him?
Throughout the whole thing?
Yeah.
No.
Because, like, I don't have as intense a recollection of all the episodes in the show, but, like, he's not an independent actor at any point. Like, there are things he does that are bad, but a lot of things he does that are bad are done by accident or done on somebody else's orders. Like, the one purely bad thing that he does is he shoots Gale in the face. But he was told to do that. Like, I'm sure there are scenes I'm forgetting because like the show is so dense that it bears rewatching. At the same time, it's difficult to rewatch the show because you know how it ends, and that's sort of half the fun. But it's also so intense that it might be uncomfortable at times to go back and rewatch it. Were there moments where he was, you know, because no one's as evil as Walt by the end of it, except for the neo-Nazis. So were there moments where Jesse was just as corrupting as Walt was? Or, you know, is he just as evil as that? Or,
you know, this is one of those shows I haven't gone back and watched a ton, if at all, just because it was like finishing a really good book. I was like, well, I don't really want to watch this again. And you can't just dip into it because they're 40 minutes at a time. But I do seem to recall that there were times when, like, after he shoots Gale in the face, they split up for a while because he's so haunted by what he's done. And they kind of go at it for a while. Like, they try to separate. He tries to separate himself from everything. And he does it a few times because every time they do something, like, also really horrible, he's like, I'm out. Like, I don't want to do this. And even by the end, I think Mike was trying to get him out too. Like, you know, you don't have to do this. Like, you're fine. Mm-hmm. And it's in the beginning, he's always being manipulated by smarter people. And by the end, he's not. That doesn't happen as much. So he had plenty of chances to walk away and didn't. Either out of his own pride or his ego, which, you know, that's a normal thing, but it was himself. It wasn't anybody else, like, goading him into it.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, yeah, he's, I don't know, I always tended to see him as, like, you know, what would his life have been like if he hadn't met Walt? Maybe he would have gotten clean, maybe he would have stopped cooking meth. And, like, opened up a dry cleaner or whatever. But, like, you know, it goes horribly. Like, everything gets worse because of Walt. Walt makes everything worse. And his, you know, the brilliant tragedy of Walter White is that, you know, the best of intentions can often lead to these kind of outcomes. And, you know, his ego gets the best of him, and then it ends up, but it affects so many people. And he never, as smart as he is, he never sees all the connections between his decision making and other people's. And so it, because he's the driving force of the story, he just kind of, you know, grabs everyone along and pulls them through. You know, nothing else happens independent of Walt. And so Jesse gets caught up in that. And yeah, I mean, he gets pushed around a lot in the beginning, but also at the end, he always seems to have remorse for what he's doing. And Walt never really seems to have that. Jesse can push it aside when he wants to, it seems. But Walt never really feels bad about any of this, per se. He's so obsessed with himself and the fact that he's good at it and the fact that he was unable to demonstrate his talent and his intellect before that like he never seems remorseful at all, because he's so focused on the family and, you know, the idea of, you know, doing this for his family, and then the fact that his ego is driving so much of his decisions. So like, I don't, you know, you see Walt, you know, Walt also does way worse things than Jesse, by, you know, letting Jane die, all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. I always looked at Jesse as way more of a tragic figure than a villain in all this. And he gets it the worst out of anyone, so it's kind of easy in a way, but...
sort of. I mean, Walt makes it worse in some cases, and yet he makes it better in others. Like, if he didn't let that girl die and didn't get involved, then he'd be addicted to heroin instead of crack, or instead of meth. You know, like, he falls into his own problems, and it's... In Walt's eyes, I'm saving him by bringing him into something special with me. It's not much better, but it's a different path. It's just a different path of evil and misery. So, mm-hmm. Like, he was never on a good path. And every time Walt tries to be, like, even in this movie, when they show the flashback, he's like, you know, you should finish high school. And he looks at him like, I did finish high school, you idiot. Like, you were there. I was at graduation with you. And that's when Walt kind of goes, like, shrugs, like, oh, like, well, maybe then you should just stick with me, because this is better than the crappy life you're living. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, he's...
Which is both helpful and condescending all at the same time.
Oh, right. Well, that's what makes him such a jerk. I mean, but Aaron Paul is such a good actor, and the character is so fun to watch that you forget all these faults. I mean, that's what happens with Walt. Everyone's like, you sympathize with Walt, even though he's a mass-murdering psycho. So, same with Tony Soprano. You know, you sympathize, but you're not supposed to feel bad for these people. They're bad people. You know. So,
what do you think of Jesse Plemons, who still isn't here yet, by the way, in case you're keeping score?
As an actor or as a character?
Both. The character of Todd and, you know.
I mean, the character was good, because they were just so off the deep end. They're like the natural end point to something like that, where Walt has to, in Breaking Bad, the show, he has to go with consistently more and more evil characters who are, you know, masterminds and this and that. And at the end, he's forced to turn to the worst of the worst, which have no guiding principle except their own evil selfishness, which is what gets them in trouble. And his character was good for that, and that, like, in his head, he's a good guy. But in reality, he's a monster. Like, he's basically using Jesse as slave labor, which is terrifying. You know, he killed the housekeeper because she found his money. And he was like, well, I can't let her know where my money is, even though she wasn't going to take it. And she was a really good housekeeper. So I had to strangle her with my belt. And you're like, oh my God, this man is insane. And he plays a very good insane person.
He really does. Like, there's no character I've seen on TV as consistently creepy as Todd is. It's just like, it works on a variety of levels, you know, like, because he's kind of cute in a way. Like, he brings him to the place, to the apartment, and he's like, well, what do you think? Isn't it great? Like, yeah. It's like he's his buddy, you know? And then, yeah, what do you think of my bedroom kind of a thing? I'm like, oh, my God. Like, it's just so weird. And then I didn't quite catch this, but I watched, I think it was a Looper YouTube video where they were talking about, like, some of the creepy things in Todd's apartment. The homemade snow globes.
Yeah.
Did you? Yeah, I didn't catch this at first because it was so bizarre. But like, did you catch the one that forget who holds it up? It might have been Jesse. I can't remember. Like, somebody holds up one of them and looks real closely. Oh no, it's the guy at the end. Not at the end, but
they're looking for the money, right?
They're looking for the money, and he holds up one of them, and it's in the snow globe is an image of Todd looking at a picture at an image of Lydia in a teacup.
And I didn't know what it was looking at. I realized it was Todd.
Yeah, it was kind of quick, and so you'd have to pause it to really look at it. But it was like, wow, that's really weird.
Yeah, well, that's like the screaming figures in the fish tank. Like mm-hmm. he had the tarantula tank he had with the spider, and they're walking by, and he has little figures. Like, you know, like you would put like a scuba diver in a fish tank kind of thing, but they were all like screaming in the air or looking in agony. I was like, oh, that's totally normal. Awesome.
I missed that. I knew, like, did you catch whose tarantula that probably was?
Yes, I did.
I had no idea. See, these are all things that are, like, I had to kind of go back and like watch a video that says, hey, here are 19 Easter eggs that you missed in the Breaking Bad movie.
So you're a bad watcher.
Yeah. Like, I mean, some of them were really subtle. Like, there was one about, like his uniform from Vamanos Pests was on the floor there. And, like small things like that, that you had no business, you know, being able to, you know, that's a catch, but I'm actually going back to look at that scene where he's with the trench look, because it's just so bizarre. But anyway, so
anything else?
Not really.
Okay then.
The guy who played the fixer, the new life guy, he just passed away.
Yeah, famous character actor.
Yeah, Robert Forster.
Mm.
So, yeah, he died, I think, the day this came out, which is sad.
And I like that character. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah, he was a good actor, but also this thing, but like, you know, it's actually a vacuum cleaner repair shop. Like, you know, it is what it looks like.
Yeah.
You know. I was going to say, too. Skinny Pete was a fun callback and with Badger. You know,
his only friends.
Yeah. And I watched an interview with that guy who plays. It was funny, like, looking, who is this guy? And then I realized, oh, my God, it's Skinny Pete. Like, looks totally different. Without all, like, you know, like that cracked out look and everything. It was
meth face.
Yeah, that was hysterical. But yeah, so don't think Jesse Plemons is going to make it to the show.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's okay. He's creepy enough, you know. Even when he's like playing a good character, he still has this kind of twinge of like, I don't know about you.
I heard him on a podcast once, and he's pretty, I don't want to say dull, but he's very much matches the character, where he's very monotone and like he's always like hiding something. So you're like, is this the way he talks? I guess it is. All right, then.
Yeah. Sort of typecast. I mean, you can kind of lean into that and have a career. A lot of people did. Do you think Aaron Paul has any range after this, or do you think this is... Because the character is not iconic. It's still relatively new, but like it's pretty specific to him. So like, I don't know. We were talking before about his you know, his lack of working in Hollywood in any sort of obvious degree for the last 6 years. And I wonder, is that a combination of making poor choices career-wise, or, you know, maybe people don't know he can do other things?
Yeah, well, he's got to be given the opportunity and pick something good.
Yeah.
You know, like I'd give him the chance to in something, but he was in one, he was on a Hulu show, I think, about a cult, like in a small town, but the show wasn't good, so nobody watched it.
Well, it's a Hulu show, for Christ's sakes. I mean, like, you got, they have one popular show, essentially.
Yeah, well, they gotta, you know, like we usually say, is the star isn't enough now to make the show, so the show has to be good as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's got to find something good. It's the rare actor that, like, oh, I'm going to watch it just for that person. You know, like, Bryan Cranston is one of those, but most people aren't.
Yeah, and he doesn't do TV anymore at all, right? Like,
not really.
Like, he does plays more than anything else. He played Lyndon Johnson something on Broadway and something else he was in. Like, he does a lot, you know, a lot of the, because he doesn't really have to work, I guess, anymore. He made so much money off this show.
Yeah.
So, good for him.
Yeah, that's very good. We're very happy for you.
So, all right. Anything else?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Well, if you all there out there listening, Jesus Christ, listen to me. If you out there listening have any thoughts about El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie, you can tweet us those thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Three Drinks in Pod. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Tell your friends, leave reviews. You can like us on Facebook and all that stuff. And if you want to email us, you can email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, so
that's the okay. Yeah. All right.
As always, please drink responsibly. And we'll talk to you all next time.
Yes. Goodbye.
Bye.